As we begin the season of Lent, the church is giving us some readings that focus our attention on the center of what's going on in human life. Remember, the whole point of religion, and especially the Christian religion, but of all religion, is to reconnect you to the meaning of life, to the center of what life is all about. The word religion itself is etymologically re ligar, which means re. Anytime you put re in front of anything, it means do it again. And ligar means to bind. And so all religion seeks to reconnect the human being with whatever that religion says is at the center of the meaning of the universe. That's what its job is. Even atheism. Atheism is a religion. And the reason is that atheism binds the person who is an atheist to the ultimate meaning of the universe, which in their understanding is emptiness and nothingness. And so, but it still has the same function. If you describe religion from the perspective of function, that's the whole point. From this, our perspective, we are, of course, Catholic Christians. And so what the church is doing for us is giving us the readings that tell us the answer to the riddle of being human. And the answer to the riddle of being human is given to us in this perspective today in the two stories that talk about temptation. Now notice, the common denominator and the common actor in both of these stories, in the first story of the paradise and the fall of humanity, and then Jesus in the desert, the common actor in both of them is Satan, in the guise of a serpent and in himself appearing to Jesus. Now notice what Satan is doing. Now, please understand, and I've said this before, but I say it every time. Anytime I talk about Adam and Eve, I'm not talking about history. I'm talking about a story, a parable that is meant to convey the meaning of what has happened without necessarily saying that this is a historical event. The word Adam means humankind, and the word Eve means mother of the living. So it's a story. It's not meant to be taken literally, but it's still true in the sense that it's giving us the meaning. Now notice what's happening in that story. God creates people, and they're doing fine. They're in the Garden of Eden, which is a good place. Now in that garden, they're free to eat of anything, except one tree in the center of the garden. Now that tree at the center of the garden is called the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. Now remember, this is not history. So the tree is a literary device to tell you that human beings are free to reject God. He made us free. And if we are really free, our relationship with him is voluntary. It's not a relationship that we are forced to have. And so what the tree does is it presents the possibility that human beings can actually reject their relationship with God the way it's been established. And so then the character of Satan comes in. And the character comes in the guise of a serpent. And the serpent says to Eve, did God really tell you? Did God really tell you not to eat of the tree of knowledge of good and evil? And Eve said, yes, he did. And actually, then Satan goes, no, no. You see, God's afraid because when you eat of it, you will be like gods. Notice what the temptation is. The temptation is no longer to be limited as a human being. No longer to live the truth of being human. The temptation is you can be a rival of God. And the tree of knowledge of good and evil, this is one of the most important things you can learn, that it's not the knowledge of knowing the difference between good and evil. That would be a good thing. The tree of knowledge of good and evil, in knowledge of something in the ancient world, meant that you had control over it. So that God could say, this thing is not good, thou shalt not. And you could go, no, I disagree with you. I say it's good. And your opinions, you were God. And so the serpent is lying to them. But Adam and Eve buy it. And then they look at the tree. Ah, it looks nice. Good. I'm hungry. It looks good. And so they pick the fruit. And by the way, the Bible doesn't say it's an apple. It just says a fruit. And they're expecting that when they eat of this fruit, there's going to be an explosion of enlightenment. An explosion. They're going to be like gods. And so they eat of it, and then their eyes are, quote, opened. Actually, they're closed, but they're opened. But what happens? What's the first thing they notice? They're naked. Now, why is that important? Because it's a concept that basically what happened was they ate of this and then they looked down and said, what the hell is this? At their own body. What the hell is this? I have no idea. And the next thing they do in the readings today is they sew fig leaves and they hide because they see God walking in the garden. And what happens next is one of my favorite parts of the Old Testament. God is walking in the garden and he says, Adam, where are you? And Adam says, we heard you in the garden and we hid because we're naked. Now, my favorite sentence is next. God says, who told you you were naked? Now, just stop right there. Think it through. Who told you you were naked? I think it's, I say this all the time. If you're in the shower, and I think most of us are naked in the shower. I don't think you shower with your clothes on. Do you need anybody to tell you you're naked? No! You know it! So why does God say, who told you you were naked? Don't you think they would have known? No. And you know why? Because the concept of nakedness had not entered the human psyche. It had not entered. It would be like, not exactly, but imagine, would you go home at any time and say to your cat, you're naked? Or to your dog, put some clothes on. Right? There's no other animal in the entire of nature in which the concept of nakedness applies. It's only us. And the reason is because nakedness is a symbol of alienation from yourself. Not only did they not know who they were physically, spiritually and psychologically, they had no idea what they were there for. All of a sudden, they didn't even know who God was. They had no idea who they were. They had nothing. And that is what the church calls original sin. Now, please remember, original sin is not something you did. It's what's called the sin at the origin. The sin that separated humankind from the ultimate purpose of what God had made us to be. It cut off our self-understanding the way God intended us to be. Why do you think we call it religion? To reconnect. You don't have to reconnect if you weren't, in some way, weren't connected and got disconnected. You're disconnected. Why do you think we all walk around? We walk around going, I don't know who I am. I'm looking for myself. And you go through periods in which you kind of know yourself. But then something happens in your life and bam, you're at it again. Who am I? You know, all of us go through that. You grow up, you go out of college, and all of a sudden you're in the working world, and who am I? Where am I going? Or, you know, when a spouse dies, or your parents die, or when your children move out, all of a sudden we call it the empty nest syndrome. Who am I? Because we go through these periods of identifying ourselves by some superficial role, superficial in relationship to God, and then when that is over, we're sort of left, who am I? Because at the very center, you're disconnected. And so the whole point of the Christian faith is that God has come to reconnect us, to give us a sense of purpose and a sense of the truth of who we are and where we are going. Until then, you're kind of, you know how one of my favorite images of how most people live lives? Have you ever, I'm pretty sure all of you have played pool, right? At one time or another, you've played pool. What happens to a ball during a break? The break. Do any of the balls have any sense of direction? And the answer is no. What determines where each of the balls is going? There's no sense of direction. They're responding to the latest collision they had in their lives. And that's what happens to most of us. We kind of go around, knocking around, not knowing really where we're going. God steps into the picture. Because in Jesus, God becomes human. It's kind of like God looked down and he said, man, you guys have screwed this up royally. You have made a mess of being human. You have no idea how to be human. And remember that old saying, if you want something done right, do it yourself. So God says, all right, I'm coming. And so he becomes human to show us how to be human. He wants to show us who he is and how to be who we're supposed to be. So what is a Christian? A Christian is a disciple of Jesus. See, Christianity, when I hear people talking about, I don't want to go to church or don't go to church. Part of me just says Christianity is not about going to church. I mean, don't get me wrong. Going to church is helpful. But Christianity is about being a disciple of Jesus. What's a disciple? A disciple is a student. If you are a student of Jesus, what's the course? The course is how to be a human being, because you don't know how to do it. And neither do I. Why don't we know how to do it? Because we're disconnected. We have no idea what it means to be a human being. And so Jesus is God being human so he can show us what a normal human being is. And we take in the course by being his disciples saying, I want to imitate you because I'm really screwed up. And I have no idea how to be a human being. And that's what a Christian is, a disciple, a student of Jesus. And so how does the New Testament begin today? What's the first thing that Jesus does? He goes into the desert right after his baptism, and guess who he meets in the desert on his retreat? The serpent. Except this time it's not a serpent. And what does the devil do? He does exactly the same thing he did to Adam and Eve. He's trying to derail Jesus in the same way he wanted to derail Adam and Eve and make them believe the lie. So Satan goes up to Jesus, and he knows who Jesus is at this stage. And he goes up to Jesus and says, look, Jesus, let's get it straight. I mean, you're hungry, right? You're hungry. Why not? You're God. Just say to one of these stones, be bread, and poof, it'll become bread. You don't have to worry about doing it the old human way. And Jesus rejects it. And then he takes Jesus to the very top of the temple. And he says, look, Jesus, you don't have to go around preaching. Just wow everybody. Just throw yourself off, because the Bible says that God's not going to let you fall to the ground. He'll send angels and they'll prop you up, and people will go, wow, look at him. He didn't fall to the ground. And you have instant disciples. No problem. And Jesus says, no, I'm not going to do that, because that's not being human. And then the final one, the devil takes him to the top of the high mountain. And he says, look, Jesus, okay, let's get it down to business here. You know you came and you're going to get crucified and you're going to die and it's not going to be pleasant. So why go through all of this? Since I've got an easy way for you to get the same result. And then he shows them all of the kingdoms of the world, including Houston, Texas, West Chase. Okay? He shows them all of us, and he says, they're all mine. And we are. We're all screwed up. We're the inheritors of the disease, the genetic, spiritual genetic disease of Adam and Eve. And so they're all mine. And he says, look, if you just bow down one time and say, I worship you, I'll give everybody to you. No need for a cross, no need for anything. And Jesus says, no. And then he says, get out of here. Now notice the two stories. In both stories, humanity is tempted. In the Old Testament story, Adam and Eve disconnect from God. And because they've disconnected from God, we inherited that disconnection. That's why I always like to use the example of a genetic disease, except that it's a spiritual genetic disease that's affecting humankind. What happens with Jesus? The exact opposite. Jesus is the first human being to be totally faithful to God. And that's why he is the example of humanity renewed. So, closing. What does this mean for us in Lent? Look, you got a choice. You can continue with the heritage of Adam and Eve. And the heritage of Adam and Eve is, forget about God. Be yourself. Do your own thing. You know, God, let God be God, and you do your own thing. That's very popular these days. Every time I hear it, I'm always going, man, original sin was invented long ago, and we're still doing it. You know, be your own man, be your own woman, my body, my choice, everything's mine. And it's total BS. By the way, BS doesn't mean what you think it means. It means beautiful stuff, but I can't help what you're thinking. But the whole point is, if you want to do that, go for it. I guarantee you, you'll relive a reasonable life. Most of the time, you'll be kind of lost. And my hunch is, you'll die a fairly unhappy person, because you will never have reached the purpose for which you were created. Or you have the choice of saying, I want to reconnect. I want to be a student of Jesus, because I need to learn how to be a human being, because I'm all screwed up. And that's a disciple of Jesus. And at Lent, we're basically renewing the choice. At the end of this Lent, on Easter Sunday, you'll have a chance to renew your baptismal vows. The 40 days is a retreat to get you prepared, to get you to remember why you're baptized, to get you to remember what this whole thing is about. So two choices. Be who you are as a child of Adam and Eve, or be a student of Jesus and learn to be what God has called you to be.